In a Washington, D.C. courtroom in 1951, the prosecution presented its case against Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, accused of passing atomic secrets to the Soviet Union. Behind the scenes stood J. Edgar Hoover, the FBI's indomitable director, who had meticulously built the case against the couple. When the judge sentenced them to death, the first American civilians executed for espionage, it marked yet another victory in Hoover's decades-long crusade against those he deemed enemies of America. Hoover's name remains synonymous with law enforcement power, having transformed a small, corrupt bureau into the world's premier investigative agency. His influence extended far beyond crime fighting into American politics and culture. Presidents feared him, celebrities courted him, and for nearly half a century, he defined America's understanding of justice and national security. What made Hoover extraordinary wasn't just his 48-year tenure, but how he shaped American society. Under his watch, the FBI became both revered and feared, celebrated in Hollywood films, comic books, and radio dramas, while simultaneously conducting secret surveillance on civil rights leaders, politicians, and ordinary citizens. His legacy remains hotly debated. Was he the incorruptible patriot who modernized law enforcement, or the paranoid autocrat who trampled civil liberties? The answer, like the man himself, defies simple categorization. J. Edgar Hoover's story begins in Washington, D.C., where he was born on January 1, 1895, to a family with deep roots in the nation's capital. His parents, Dickerson Naylor Hoover and Annie Marie Scheitlin, lived in a modest row house at 413 Seward Square in the Capitol Hill neighborhood where government clerks and middle-class families made their homes. Though he later crafted an image of a perfect childhood, the reality was far more complex and haunting. Behind the respectable facade lay a family history marked by suicide, mental illness, and scandal. 15 years before Hoover's birth, his maternal grandfather had drowned himself in the Anacostia River, leaving behind whispers of financial impropriety. His father, Dickerson Hoover, a government printmaker, would later suffer a devastating mental breakdown and die from melancholia and inanition, severe depression that left him without the will to live. These family tragedies shaped young Edgar profoundly, instilling in him an acute awareness of social stigma and the fragility of reputation. From an early age, he developed an obsession with control, order, and respectability, qualities that would later define his leadership style. At Central High School, he distinguished himself not only academically, but also in debate club and ROTC, demonstrating early signs of his argumentative skill and authoritarian bent. As valedictorian of his class and later a standout student at George Washington University Law School, Hoover demonstrated the relentless drive and ambition that would propel his career. He worked as a library clerk at the Library of Congress while attending night classes, meticulously organizing index cards, an early indication of his lifelong obsession with collecting and cataloging information. By age 22, he had secured a position at the Justice Department, beginning his lifelong commitment to government service. Hoover's worldview was profoundly shaped by his membership in Kappa Alpha, a fraternity that celebrated the Lost Cause mythology of the Confederate South and championed racial segregation. The organization's rituals and ceremonies, which included homages to Robert E. Lee and the antebellum South, reinforced notions of racial hierarchy and social order that would later influence his law enforcement policies. This early exposure to hierarchical thinking and racial conservatism would become evident in his approach to civil rights investigations and his targeting of African American organizations. Though he would later position himself as above politics, these formative experiences established the ideological framework through which he would interpret America's social challenges. The young Hoover witnessed firsthand the social upheaval of the World War I era, a period that crystallized his views on national security and domestic threats. As anarchist bombings targeted prominent Americans, including his future boss, A. Mitchell Palmer, Hoover became convinced of the need for aggressive domestic surveillance. Working under Palmer during the infamous Red Scare of 1919-2020, he played a central role in organizing the Palmer Raids, which resulted in the arrest of thousands of suspected radicals. He developed innovative methods of intelligence gathering, including the use of informants and careful documentation of suspected subversives. Though these operations were later criticized for civil liberties violations, they provided Hoover with valuable experience in intelligence gathering and demonstrated his talent for bureaucratic organization, skills that would become hallmarks of his later leadership of the FBI. His handling of the raids also revealed his gift for public relations, as he carefully managed press coverage and maintained detailed files that would protect him from later criticism. When Hoover was appointed acting director of the Bureau of Investigation in 1924, he inherited an organization mired in corruption and political favoritism. The Bureau had been implicated in the Teapot Dome scandal, with agents serving as pawns in political vendettas rather than impartial investigators. At just 29 years old, Hoover was tasked with cleaning house and establishing professional standards that would restore public confidence. The Bureau, Hoover declared, must be divorced from politics and must be a career organization. He immediately fired incompetent agents, established rigorous hiring standards requiring law or accounting degrees, and implemented a strict code of conduct. Agents were forbidden from drinking on duty, accepting gifts, or engaging in conduct unbecoming a gentleman. These reforms transformed the Bureau from a political dumping ground into a professional law enforcement agency. Hoover's vision extended beyond mere house cleaning. He recognized that modern crime required modern methods. Under his direction, the Bureau established a state-of-the-art forensic laboratory, a centralized fingerprint collection, and a national crime statistics program. He recruited experts in ballistics, handwriting analysis, and chemical testing, positioning the Bureau at the forefront of scientific crime detection. By 1932, the Bureau had compiled over 4 million fingerprint records and was processing 2,000 new prints daily, an unprecedented resource for law enforcement nationwide. The Depression years presented new challenges as bank robberies and kidnapping surged across America. Hoover's agents were initially ill-equipped for these violent crimes, having been selected more for their educational credentials than their combat skills. The Kansas City Massacre of 1933, which claimed the life of an agent, forced Hoover to adapt. He secured congressional authorization for agents to carry firearms and make arrests, transforming his corps of accountants and lawyers into the armed federal police force we recognize today. The Bureau's pursuit of notorious criminals like John Dillinger, Pretty Boy Floyd, and Alvin Karpis captured the public imagination. When Dillinger was killed outside Chicago's Biograph Theater in 1934, Hoover's agents became national heroes, G-men who always got their man. Though Hoover himself had initially resisted this shift toward gunplay, he quickly recognized its public relations value. By 1935, when Congress officially renamed the organization the Federal Bureau of Investigation, Hoover had established himself as America's top lawman. Throughout his public life, Hoover maintained a carefully controlled image of moral rectitude. He never married, living with his mother Annie until her death in 1938, after which he established his own household in Washington's upscale Forest Hills neighborhood. His most significant relationship was with Clyde Tolson, whom he hired in 1928 and who rose to become associate director of the FBI. For over four decades, the two men were inseparable, dining together daily, vacationing together, and attending social functions as a pair. The nature of their relationship has been the subject of endless speculation. They maintained separate residences, but spent nearly all their free time together. When Hoover died in 1972, he left the bulk of his estate to Tolson, who received the flag from Hoover's casket at his funeral. While some contemporaries describe their relationship as merely a close friendship between bachelor colleagues, others in Washington society recognized it as something more intimate. This aspect of Hoover's life created a profound contradiction. even as he maintained what many recognized as a same-sex partnership, the FBI, under his leadership, aggressively investigated and persecuted homosexuals in government service. During the Lavender Scare of the early 1950s, thousands of gay and lesbian federal employees lost their jobs, with the FBI maintaining extensive files on their private lives. Hoover justified this campaign on national security grounds, arguing that homosexuals were vulnerable to blackmail by foreign agents. Hoover's personal contradictions extended to his social life as well. Despite his public image as a stern moralist, he enjoyed the company of celebrities and the trappings of high society. He was a regular at racetracks, nightclubs like New York's Stork Club, and Hollywood premieres. His friendship with gossip columnist Walter Winchell provided both social connections and media protection, while his relationships with wealthy benefactors like Texas oilmen Clint Murchison and Sid Richardson afforded him luxuries beyond his government salary. These contradictions, between public rectitude and private indulgence, between professional duty and personal preference, reveal the complexity of a man who spent his life policing the boundaries of American morality while navigating his own complicated relationship to those boundaries. The end of World War II marked a pivotal shift in Hoover's career. As America's wartime alliance with the Soviet Union collapsed into Cold War hostility, Hoover positioned the FBI as the nation's primary bulwark against communist infiltration. Drawing on his experience from the first Red Scare, he warned of a vast conspiracy threatening American institutions from within. The Communist Party of the United States, Hoover testified before Congress in 1947, is a fifth column if there ever was one. It is far better organized than were the Nazis and occupied countries prior to their capitulation. This stark framing resonated with a public increasingly anxious about Soviet expansionism and the spread of communism in Eastern Europe. Under Hoover's direction, the FBI compiled extensive files on suspected communists and their fellow travelers. The Bureau's security index listed individuals to be detained in case of national emergency, while informants infiltrated left-wing organizations across the country. These efforts gained momentum after the 1948 Alger Hiss case and the 1950 arrest of atomic spies Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, which seemed to confirm Hoover's warnings about Soviet espionage. While Senator Joseph McCarthy grabbed headlines with sensational accusations about communists in government, Hoover preferred more methodical approaches. He cultivated relationships with congressional committees like the House Un-American Activities Committee, HUAC, providing information while maintaining public distance from their more controversial hearings. This strategy allowed Hoover to survive McCarthy's downfall while continuing his anti-communist campaign. In 1956, Hoover secretly launched COINTELPRO, counterintelligence program, designed to expose, disrupt, misdirect, discredit, or otherwise neutralize targeted groups and individuals. Initially focused on the Communist Party, COINTELPRO eventually expanded to include civil rights organizations, black nationalist groups, anti-war activists, and the New Left. Tactics included anonymous letters, fake media campaigns, IRS audits, and the deliberate exacerbation of factional disputes within targeted organizations. The civil rights movement presented Hoover with a particular challenge. Though the FBI investigated some racial crimes, like the 1964 murders of civil rights workers in Mississippi, Hoover remained deeply suspicious of the movement's leadership. He authorized extensive surveillance of Martin Luther King Jr., convinced that King was influenced by communist advisors. This surveillance extended beyond legitimate security concerns to include King's personal life, with agents bugging hotel rooms and compiling information on extramarital affairs. In 1964, an anonymous FBI letter was sent to King suggesting he commit suicide to avoid public humiliation, perhaps the most shameful episode in the Bureau's history. Hoover's hostility toward King reflected both his anti-communist paranoia and his conservative views on race. Having grown up in segregated Washington and maintained membership in the Southern-oriented Kappa Alpha fraternity, Hoover was uncomfortable with challenges to the racial status quo. He viewed civil disobedience as lawlessness and suspected that demands for racial equality masked more radical aims. This blindness to the justice of civil rights claims represented one of Hoover's most significant moral failure. By the late 1960s, Hoover had become an institution unto himself. Though he had reached the mandatory retirement age of 70 in 1965, President Lyndon Johnson issued a special waiver allowing him to continue as FBI director. When Richard Nixon won the presidency in 1968, he maintained this arrangement, recognizing Hoover's political value to his law and order agenda. Nixon and Hoover shared a long friendship dating back to Nixon's days in Congress. Both men were suspicious of liberals, intellectuals, and social movements they viewed as threatening traditional values. Yet their relationship grew strained as Nixon's White House sought to use the FBI for political purposes beyond what even Hoover would tolerate. When White House aide Tom Charles Huston proposed a plan for expanded domestic surveillance in 1970, Hoover objected, fearing it would expose the Bureau to legal liability. Nixon, frustrated by what he saw as Hoover's excessive caution, began considering how to ease the aging director into retirement. Hoover's final years were marked by increasing isolation and paranoia. Many of his closest associates had retired or died, leaving him dependent on a shrinking circle of loyalists. His health was declining, though he worked diligently to conceal this fact. Most significantly, his once sterling public image had tarnished as younger Americans questioned his methods and motives. The 1971 break-in at the FBI's Media Pennsylvania office, which revealed documents detailing COINTELPRO operations, further damaged the Bureau's reputation. On May 2, 1972, Hoover died in his sleep at his Washington home, ending his unprecedented 48-year tenure as FBI director. President Nixon ordered flags flown at half-staff and declared a national day of mourning. Hoover's body lay in state in the Capitol Rotunda, an honor typically reserved for presidents and military leaders. At his funeral, Nixon eulogized him as one of the giants who had personified integrity and honor and principle. Yet even as official Washington paid tribute, the seeds of a different legacy were taking root. In the years following Hoover's death, congressional investigations revealed the full extent of FBI abuses under his leadership. The Church Committee documented illegal surveillance, harassment of political dissidents, and violations of constitutional rights that shocked many Americans. In 1976, Congress passed legislation limiting future FBI directors to a single 10-year term, ensuring that no one would ever again accumulate the power Hoover had wielded for nearly half a century. J. Edgar Hoover's legacy defies simple judgment. He transformed American law enforcement, establishing professional standards and scientific methods that revolutionized the field. Under his leadership, the FBI became a model of administrative efficiency and technical expertise. Its laboratory, training academy, and identification division set global standards that endure today. Yet these achievements came at a significant cost. Hoover's obsession with communism and subversion led him to authorize tactics that undermined the very constitutional principles he claimed to defend. His surveillance of political dissidents, use of deceptive counterintelligence techniques, and compilation of secret files on public figures represented serious abuses of government power. His blindness to racial injustice and hostility towards civil rights leaders placed him on the wrong side of America's moral reckoning with its history of discrimination. Perhaps most troubling was Hoover's accumulation of power without accountability. By cultivating relationships with presidents, congressmen, and journalists, he insulated himself from oversight. His extensive files on politicians' private lives, what enemies called his secret dossiers, created a climate of fear that discouraged criticism. Though he maintained the appearance of being above politics, Hoover wielded enormous political influence, shaping public perceptions of threats and determining which groups deserved government scrutiny. The contradictions in Hoover's character mirror larger contradictions in American society. His rise from modest circumstances to national prominence embodied the American dream of meritocratic achievement. His emphasis on professional expertise reflected progressive-era faith in scientific management and administrative efficiency. Yet his suspicion of dissent, comfort with racial hierarchy, and willingness to circumvent legal constraints revealed darker currents in American political culture. In the final analysis, J. Edgar Hoover was neither the flawless patriot of FBI mythology nor the simple villain of his harshest critics. He was a complex figure whose strengths and flaws were magnified by the extraordinary power he accumulated. His story serves as both inspiration and warning, a testament to the potential of public service and a reminder of the dangers when power operates without constraint. As Americans continue to debate the proper balance between security and liberty, Hoover's legacy remains essential to understanding how these tensions have shaped our national experience. Hoover's transformation of the FBI from a small, corrupt agency into a powerful national institution represented one of the most significant developments in American governance during the 20th century. When he became director in 1924, the Bureau employed just 441 people, including 61 agents. By the time of his death in 1972, it had grown to over 19,000 employees, with field offices across the nation and legal attachés in embassies worldwide. This expansion reflected broader changes in American society and government. The rise of interstate crime in the 1930s, the national security challenges of World War II, and the Cold War's ideological battles all demanded federal responses that the FBI was positioned to provide. Hoover proved remarkably adept at identifying emerging threats and securing new authorities and resources to address them. The Bureau's evolution under Hoover proceeded through distinct phases. In the 1920s, he focused on professionalization, establishing hiring standards and administrative procedures. The 1930s saw the Bureau transformed into a crime-fighting force, pursuing bank robbers and kidnappers across state lines. During World War II, counterespionage became the priority, with the FBI thwarting Nazi saboteurs and tracking down spies. The post-war years brought an emphasis on anti-communism and domestic intelligence gathering that would dominate until the social upheavals of the 1960s forced yet another shift toward countering perceived threats from civil rights, black power, and anti-war movements. Throughout these transitions, Hoover maintained certain constants. He insisted on meticulous record-keeping, with agents producing detailed reports on their activities. He emphasized loyalty to the Bureau and its director, creating an institutional culture that valued conformity and discouraged dissent. And he maintained strict control over the Bureau's public image, ensuring that its successes received maximum publicity while its failures remained hidden. This image management represented one of Hoover's most significant innovations. He recognized early the power of mass media to shape public perceptions of law enforcement. Through relationships with friendly journalists, cooperation with Hollywood studios, and the Bureau's own publications, Hoover crafted a narrative of the FBI as an elite force of incorruptible agents using scientific methods to pursue justice. This narrative, reinforced through radio programs like the FBI in Peace and War and television shows like the FBI, created a reservoir of public goodwill that sustained the Bureau through controversies and criticism. More than 50 years after his death, J. Edgar Hoover's name still evokes strong reactions. For some, he remains the embodiment of law enforcement excellence, the professional who established the FBI as the world's premier investigative agency, transforming it from a small, ineffective bureau into a powerful institution with cutting-edge forensic capabilities and rigorous training standards. For others, he represents the dangers of unchecked government power, the surveillance state personified, whose COINTELPRO program and secret files on politicians exemplified the abuse of federal authority. These divergent views reflect ongoing debates about the proper balance between security and liberty in American democracy. How much power should law enforcement agencies possess? What limits should constrain government surveillance? When does the pursuit of security threaten the very freedoms it aims to protect? These questions have become even more pressing in the digital age, where technological capabilities for surveillance and data collection far exceed anything Hoover could have imagined. Hoover's career offers no simple answers to these questions, but it provides essential context for understanding them. His successes in combating organized crime, including the takedown of notorious gangsters like John Dillinger and Machine Gun Kelly, demonstrated the value of coordinated federal law enforcement. His counterintelligence victories against Nazi espionage during World War II and Soviet operations during the Cold War highlighted the importance of a professional federal agency with national reach. However, his abuses in targeting political dissidents, civil rights leaders like Martin Luther King Jr., and others he deemed subversive revealed the dangers when such an agency operates without adequate oversight or constitutional restraints. The reforms implemented after Hoover's death, including the 10-year term limit for FBI directors, congressional oversight committees, and legal constraints on domestic surveillance through FISA courts, addressed some of the most glaring problems of his era. Yet many of the tensions he navigated remain unresolved. Each new security threat, from international terrorism after 9/11 to sophisticated cybercrime networks and foreign election interference, renews debates about the proper scope of government investigative powers and the balance between national security and civil liberties. Perhaps the most important lesson from Hoover's long tenure is the danger of allowing any individual to accumulate too much unaccountable power. Despite his undeniable talents and achievements in modernizing law enforcement, Hoover's concentration of authority ultimately corrupted his judgment and undermined the very institutions he had helped build. His personal files on political figures, unauthorized wiretaps, and secret operations created a shadow government answerable only to him. As Americans continue to grapple with questions of security, privacy, and democratic accountability in an era of global threats and digital surveillance, Hoover's complex legacy offers both inspiration and caution, a reminder of government's capacity to protect citizens and its potential to threaten the liberties it was established to secure. The challenge remains finding the right balance between effective law enforcement and the preservation of constitutional rights.